Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Dark Rhino Security, Security Confidential. This is your host, Manoj Tandon. Today, I am joined by Shay Nangle. Shay is a fantastic guy, has over 25 years of experience in cybersecurity, everything from a think tank to being a practitioner. But, you know, his background, is in risk, it's in technology, it's in incident response and planning, crisis management, security assessments, developing cybersecurity programs to a very high level of maturity. We're honored to have him, and we're grateful to get his insights. Shay, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me on.
So, you know, we always like to start with a little bit of your background and understanding how you got into cyber. And everyone has a strange journey. So
yep.
We'd love to hear yours. You know, what was the roadway like?
When I was kind of coming up and moving into the field, you know, there was no training for cybersecurity. There were no cybersecurity yep. degree programs. I actually graduated from undergrad program with a bachelor's in religious studies.
Awesome. Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Really by coincidence, kind of slowly started moving into more technical and not necessarily initially security, but more IT related fields. Was living in a town where a fairly large research university was. And, you know, if you've ever spent time in those sorts of towns, often your choice for employment is with the university. And, you know, there's maybe one or two other companies. So started working at the university and mostly in service management, ran the campus email system for a number of years, that sort of thing. Decided I was sick and tired of getting calls in the middle of the night, so I would move into security and on the defensive side.
Okay.
Now, I recognize, you know, hindsight being 2020, that is an absurd thought to have. In my defense of having that thought, the position I was moving into was relatively non-technical and more, it was a policy development position, really.
Okay.
So I did think, you know, who's gonna page me at, you know, 2 a.m. to say, we need a new policy written, or, you know, can you weigh in on this, you know, federal compliance mandate or something like that? Ironically enough, for having that thought process, the first week in that position, I was taking part of that Friday off, and at about 2 o'clock that afternoon, on my way out of town on vacation, someone called with an emergency policy question. So,
okay, do you remember what the question was?
I remember like almost perfectly. Like the only aspects I don't really remember is like what specific unit on campus was involved, but it was a researcher that was applying for a federal grant, and it was, everything had been left to the last minute, and so like they had to get the rest of the grant paperwork in like that day or by the next Monday, or, you know, within, okay, you know, 72 hours or something. And the grant required a certain degree of FISMA compliance, and they wanted us to weigh in on, you know, in this specific research lab or whatever it was,
couldn't call you later in the day or
no. So yeah, that was my introduction to you know, no longer being tied to a pager. And then moved over to Echelon Risk and Cyber, where I am now, and I'm the director of advisory services at Echelon currently.
Wow, that's, you know, it's so interesting that we've had people from such diverse backgrounds, and I definitely, you're a very diverse background. I got to say that, Shay. You're the first person from religious studies that transferred to cyber, but we had a nurse that's transferred to cyber. She was on as well.
Yeah. And I think it's also, I mean, it's, you know, representative, and, you know, the person that moved into it from nursing, as you referenced, is another kind of perfect example of this. You know, I think there is, There is certainly great value to be had in terms of specific training and education in cybersecurity, but we need people with diverse backgrounds. That only makes us as a field and as a community stronger if we can, if we can really maintain that.
Well, the thing is, I agree with you completely, and cyber is very much, unfortunately, oftentimes when you talk to the layperson, it's looked at as a technology problem, mm-hmm. and it's very much a business problem, and it's a people problem. And having that diversity of background, I don't think you can have enough diversity of background to address a people problem.
Yeah,
people are probably one of the biggest cyber assets on the planet, and oftentimes, unfortunately, they are one of the biggest neglected assets a company has, and getting people with a different background set might help organizations become more secure by incorporating their employee pools more into the processes.
Yeah.
So what does your work at Echelon Risk entail? What do you guys do there?
A little of everything. I mean, looking kind of at the company as a whole, we have a number of kind of groups within the company. Do a good deal of offensive security work. We also have a group that focuses on defensive security and defensive engineering. Group for third-party risk management, and also for a practice in virtual CISO services, so strategic advising, those sorts of things.
You work with so many companies, the executive teams, the boards, how has their mindset changed on cybersecurity?
I think there's been a fairly fundamental change. If I look kind of way back to when I was first starting in cybersecurity, at that point, boards weren't really acknowledging that it wasn't even something they talked about. We're certainly seeing that more and more. As you said early on in this conversation, you can't look at the newspaper without seeing, multiple stories about breaches almost every day. So companies are at the board level are certainly starting to recognize that cybersecurity is something that needs to be acknowledged and addressed. Whether or not it has sufficient resources varies greatly from company to company at this point. Whether or not it is appropriate governance structures are in place, again, varies from company to company, but companies companies are acknowledging at the C-suite level or at the board level that this is a very real and ongoing issue. It's not, how do we protect against, this specific issue, and then, we don't need to think about it until the next thing.
It's good to know that and to hear that from a professional who's dealing with this every day, because it's not a problem that's going away anytime soon. And what we're seeing now, Shay, with the massive changes that are happening almost on a daily basis with the cyber insurance sector, boards are going to have to get engaged, and the financial departments are going to have to get engaged in the solving of cyber resiliency, if you will, for an organization. Yeah.
Well, and the other thing you talked about, kind of financial involvement in this, something that, I've been kind of watching for a while that, some companies are certainly starting to do. I think we're going to start seeing this a lot more, is for a very long time within companies, financial risk and security risk were treated completely differently and were in silos that were very far apart within the organization, and no one in those two silos ever talked. And I think we're starting to see a shift. I think it's in the very early stages, but we're starting to see a shift of companies starting to address those in a holistic fashion, which I think is going to be critical for companies moving forward. Things are not getting easier in terms of you know, frequency and sophistication of attacks, those sorts of things. It's not like this is, as you said, it's not like this is going away anytime soon.
No,
you know,
it's not. And
I've always said, you know, the good news, bad news about working in cybersecurity is, you know, if you want to work for literally the rest of your life, you have job security. Like, yes. Hands down, no question, you've got job security. The bad news is I recognized years ago, there was never a point at which I would, you know, leave my office, come home, say to my wife, okay, we're done. Like, everything's secure. We've fixed everything. It's just, you know, it'll never happen. So,
no, it's very much turned into a Cold War kind of scenario, mm-hmm. you know, where each adversary is trying to outwit the other, whether that be through technology, through people, through propaganda, whatever the case may be. It's now turned into that because it's very lucrative. I mean, if right. you think about it, I mean, it at a fundamental level, it's a Bonnie and Clyde job, right? Only Bonnie and Clyde had to work. They had to go out, rob a bank, and then run away, and then fight off the cops. And now you can sit in your living room and kind of execute the same kind of things without all that violence and fanfare happening.
Yeah.
With the net result, you still have somebody else's money, though you acquired it illegally, but you have it.
Yeah. And, you know, and I had a conversation with a coworker about this kind of the evolution of cybercrime earlier this week, actually. And, you know, that it's turned into obviously a very big and lucrative business, but also a very real business. You know, we're seeing cybercrime organizations that are set up literally like businesses, and they have affiliate programs, and they have, you know, some degree of marketing plan and, you know, defined roles in kind of the life cycle of the attack from very early stages to, you know, laundering money and kind of everything in between.
Absolutely. I mean, that there's an entire underground market there. Right. You can acquire ransomware as a service. You can acquire penetrated companies, compromised identities. There's so much out there that it's crazy how there's a little bit of an infrastructure that's in place.
Yeah, there definitely is.
I know we have time for one more question.
Yeah,
and I do want to get to it. We're not going to get through our whole list, but that'll leave some stuff for next time. The Biden administration has talked about hack back. And I wanted to get, and that's a proactive side of cybersecurity. What are your opinions on it? And do you have any thoughts or anecdotes you can share?
I've been spending, you know, I'm enough of a policy geek at heart that I've actually been spending some quality time with the National Cybersecurity Strategy that was released, and actually am planning on the Echelon website, we'll be releasing kind of my analysis and commentary on that within the next couple weeks. It was interesting to see, you know, what they had to say in terms of kind of the hack back approach. And there's really two pieces there. There's, you know, what is the US government and intelligence agencies and military doing? And what's the involvement of private industry? And, you know, on the first side of things, what's the kind of governmental/military approach? You know, those capabilities have been around and have been utilized for many years.
Sure.
That's really nothing new. Now, how much have they been used in terms of things impacting, say, business operations has varied greatly. You know, a lot of that has been more on the military and intelligence side. Starting to really explicitly loop private industry in creates some really interesting challenges there, I think, from a policy point of view and also from kind of a precedent point of view. And the National Cybersecurity Strategy, and I don't fault it for this, you know, they give a few very high-level examples of the sort of involvement that private industry may have in this sort of approach. It's lack of offensive cybersecurity operations. And they talk about it at a very high level, which I don't take any issue with. But I think it raises a lot of points for whether or not it is appropriate for private industry to be involved. And as I said, you know, they're referencing this at a high level. There are a number of different ways that private industry can be involved, from more of a information gathering and reporting point of view, you know, information sharing agreements with law enforcement agencies, that sort of thing.
Right.
You know, we're seeing these sorts of attacks coming in. Here's where they appear to be originating from, those sorts of things that may feed into offensive operations. I believe there was also a mention in the National Cybersecurity Strategy about potential for private industry also providing things like training for
right.
you know, operators on the federal side. I get a little nervous when I think about this in the context that I think if you're reading the National Cybersecurity Strategy and kind of looking at what are the potential implications of this, I think one natural conclusion, although it's not explicitly called for in the National Cybersecurity Strategy, is private industry directly performing offensive cybersecurity operations against adversaries.
That there's a lot of implications that if
yeah.
we were to start doing that are going to come into play.
Yeah. You know, and it ranges from, so if company X starts doing that, well, first of all, are they, you know, is this being done, in fact, you know, in cooperation with federal law enforcement, you know, those sorts of agencies, or are they kind of doing this out on their own? If they're doing this out on their own, or even if they're not, what are the sort of, assuming, for instance, that these are adversaries in another country, what sort of repercussions then occur for the company, be they legal
or the individual
in the country where the adversary is, or does this then lead to heightened, essentially revenge attacks if, you know, company X performs an offensive operation and, let's say, brings down a portion of infrastructure for an organized crime organization, you know, in whether it's
yeah.
domestic or foreign, you know, it doesn't really matter. Does that then mean that that company is going to be targeted more? We could probably talk for an hour about the implications.
You know what? We're going to have to. I think we're going to have you back to have a discussion on that topic.
I'd love to.
Because it's a deep one, and you're right. I mean, and to me, fundamentally, attribution, how does an individual organization actually get to real attribution? That's a rabbit hole in itself. But
we're at the
hour here.
Yeah. Attribution was exactly the next thing I was going to say. So you've provided an excellent segue for the next conversation we have. It's perfect.
That's fantastic. I look forward to that, Shay.
Me
but
too.
I do want to give you the floor for a minute.
Yeah.
Anything you want to plug? Anything you want to make us aware of? And
I do. So I have a couple of speaking engagements coming up, but those are private. So there's not really much point in me plugging them. I have submissions in or queued up for a number of conferences this summer. Hopefully, you know, we'll be ideally next time we talk. I'd love to have some of those to plug.
Fantastic.
I will, however, and this ties back into a conversation that you and I were having closer to the beginning. I'm actually going to put in a plug for a presentation that one of my coworkers is giving, who was a previous guest on the show.
Sure, please.
Amy Jo Fisher will be presenting at the 2023 Central Ohio InfoSec Summit, which is in, I believe it's April 20th that starts. Have a specific date yet. And she'll be presenting specifically on strategies for avoiding check-the-box compliance. So,
okay.
Should be. I had an opportunity to see an early version of that presentation, and I think it's going to be a really, really valuable presentation, and highly encourage people to attend if they can.
Fantastic. Well, we'll also, if you can send us the links, we can put them in the show notes.
Terrific.
As well when we push it out.
Okay.
That's fantastic. Great. Well, Shay, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For being here.
Yeah.
I look forward to seeing you again.
Yeah, definitely. Would love to be on again.
Take care.
Thanks a lot.